Welcome to the Food Revolution Summit, where we explore how you can heal your body and your world with food. This is Ocean Robbins, and I am joined by my dad and colleague, John Robbins, in welcoming our guest, Amy Goodman. Amy Goodman is a journalist, an author, an activist, and the executive producer and host of Democracy Now!, which is a syndicated and hugely popular radio and television program reaching millions of people every weekday. Amy has received many awards for her work in journalism, including the Right Livelihood Award. With a central focus on democracy and citizen empowerment, Amy and her team investigate and shed light on current and vital issues that mainstream media often fails to address. Her food coverage has brought important insights to issues like food insecurity, animal rights, GMO labeling laws, and the plight of small-scale family farms in America and around the world. So now, Amy, my dad and I are just thrilled and honored that we get to have this time with you. And now for the interview, I'm going to hand it over to my dad, John Robbins.
Thank you, Ocean. And Amy, I am so delighted that you are joining us. I am a big fan of yours.
Well, I'm really honored to be with both of you.
Thank you. I understand that some years ago you took a break from college, I think it was the late 70s, and you went to Bar Harbor, Maine, and joined the whole grain bakery collective called Sunflower. I don't think this is something you talk about very often, but how long did you live there? And did the experience of being part of this successful business have any kind of formative impact on you and on your views about health and nutrition?
Oh, definitely. I had moved to Maine to be a visiting student at College of the Atlantic in Bar Harbor, where you get a degree in human ecology. You know, I was very intrigued by the idea of humans and their natural environment, everything looked at in that way. But I ended up working at the Sunflower Bakery, the Flour and Sunflowers, F-L-O-U-R. It was a collective. We baked thousands of loaves of bread a week, organic, macrobiotic, whole grain breads, granolas, peanut butter, oatmeal sesame cookies, and we delivered them throughout the coast of Maine every week. And I thought the greatest coup would be able to get the bread into the schools of Bar Harbor for the kids to eat, but we could not compete with Wonder Bread. You know, Wonder Bread could stay on the shelves for 2 years. Our bread would mold within a week because it was alive, and that's what made it so fresh. That's what made it so healthy. So I really was immersed in the politics of food. At the end of that, though, I knew I wanted to study nutrition further and was very interested in the biochemistry of nutrition and decided to come back to school and finish my degree, and I ended up going to the School of Public Health, an elite university, to get some of my undergraduate requirements. And the first course I came back for was a nutrition class, and I sat down in the class, and the professor was talking about the merits of sugar and the myths that it was bad. And I was amazed. Everyone was just sitting there obediently taking notes, and I thought, are you kidding? At the end of the class, I walk out, and there is a plaque in the hallway that said, this wing built by Domino's. So it was really no surprise the way the system works, the whole academic food complex. But that's what has to be challenged. But food and science, appropriate technology and sustainability has always been a major theme of Democracy Now!
Well, one of the many reasons that I think Democracy Now! Is so profoundly important is that very often the mainstream media ignores or distorts many issues that really are of significance. When it comes to the food world, what to you are some of the important issues that you see as being underreported or misreported in the mainstream media?
Well, I think the themes across many different subjects, but it involves food as well, and that's corporate control. And this is something that people care about across the political spectrum. What can be more intimate than the food we ingest and what it is and having control over that? The idea that it is very difficult to figure out in this country what it is we're eating is a very big problem, and that corporations are increasingly controlling the flow of information to figure out what it is, you know, whether we're talking about food labeling and the efforts to label GMOs and how the corporations join together in fighting any effort to let us know if we're eating genetically modified organisms. It's just critical that we get a hold of the information about what we're eating, just a sense of the whole food chain. In school, it has to be demystified for kids. It's very important we learn where food comes from, who grows it, what there are the ingredients, and I think that'll prevent a lot of problems. But corporations don't want us to know this. And the more control they have over the information flow, the harder we have to fight to get that information.
When you talk about corporate control of the food system, I'm thinking about the fact that not very many people really understand that most of the iconic organic brands have been bought and are now owned and controlled by the titans of the junk food industry. I'll give a few examples. Honest Tea, Odwalla, and Zico Coconut Water are now owned by Coca-Cola. Cascadian Farms and Muir Glen are owned by General Mills. Naked Juice is owned by Pepsi. Tom's of Maine, the toothpaste company, is owned by Colgate. Some people say it's a good thing that the natural foods industry is growing and going mainstream. Others think it's in danger of losing its very soul. What goes through your mind when you see corporate America taking over the natural and organic food business?
Well, it's nice to know that organic food is profitable, but when these corporations are the ones that are profiting, they are taking that money, they're taking their profits, and they're using it to fight our access to information. I mean, when you look at the Washington State GMO labeling battle, and the corporations like Pepsi-Cola and Coca-Cola and Monsanto and others that poured $22 million into fighting the labeling. So you buy organic foods that are owned by these corporations, and they take those profits and they use them to fight our access to getting more information. So that's a very, very big problem.
As a journalist, how important do you think it is for people to have the right to know which foods contain GMOs and which don't?
I think it's very important. Just the fact that these corporations don't want us to know should make us ever more curious. As a journalist, it's our job to get the information out there, and it's increasingly difficult for everyone. We live in a globalized world, but it's still in this country extremely difficult to get information, and we have to keep pushing and understanding how the whole system works. So when you have organizations like ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, the Koch-funded and other-funded association of corporations and business leaders and political leaders that meet together and decide how to write legislation, everything from stand-your-ground laws to fighting food labeling laws. We have to break that nexus between corporate power and political power, because that's determining our entire environment.
ALEC has also been working behind the scenes, providing model bills written by corporate lobbyists, giving them to state legislators who then introduce them in state legislatures nationwide. And in the world of food, they have been behind what are called ag-gag bills. I know you devoted an edition of Democracy Now! To ag-gag bills. These are laws that criminalize undercover filming on farms and at slaughterhouses that would document instances of severe animal abuse. Bills like this are sweeping the country. Earlier this year, Idaho Governor Butch Otter signed into law one of these bills that makes it illegal in Idaho now for whistleblowers to expose abusive practices at factory farms and imposes fines and jail time on activists who would secretly film abuse. What's your view of these so-called ag-gag bills?
their very big problem. What is investigative journalism? That going into places to find out something a corporation or some entity doesn't want you to know about. This is now illegal. Investigating corporations is becoming illegal. And yet this is about the health of all of us. It's about the health of the animals and how they're treated in these facilities. And it's about the people who eat the animals and what actually happens in these places. It's a threat to a democratic society when you start saying that there are certain entities that are off limits for investigation.
From efforts to prevent labeling of GMOs to efforts to criminalize taking undercover footage of factory farms, it seems that keeping the public in the dark is the name of the game. Who is benefiting from keeping the public ignorant?
Sadly, the corporations benefit because then they can have more and more difficult conditions in these places and no one's going to know about them. But ultimately, we're all hurt by it. And that's the power of democracy, is it takes people pushing back. You know, democracy is never achieved. It's something we fight for every single day. It oscillates back and forth. And we have to push very hard to have access. You think of Upton Sinclair exposing the jungle, the meatpacking plants. These are the great investigative journalistic moments in history. And we have to continue that work. The idea that laws are now being written that say this is illegal to investigate should just make us more determined. And people should be changing those laws. Ultimately, laws are written at the will of the people, at the behest of the people, and people have to decide what it is we want to know.
You mentioned ALEC. That stands, of course, for the American Legislative Exchange Council, and they've been writing these ag gag bills that various states have been passing. They have lately been introducing new wrinkles into those laws. They're writing them in such a way, they're very broad, and they turn not just those who take photos or videos into criminals, but also anyone who distributes or possesses that footage. They basically put at risk any media outlet or reporter who might broadcast or report on the footage. It's hard to see bills like this not having a chilling effect on journalists, on the nature of journalism itself.
They do. And of course, you have the journalistic organizations themselves owned by corporations. There's hundreds of channels, but a handful of owners of those channels. And those corporations that own them are not necessarily media companies either. Parts of their companies can be running slaughterhouses and another one can be running one of the networks. So that's why independent media is so important. And why we have to keep the internet open and free, why we have to fight for network neutrality. The corporations, the video companies, and the telephone companies want to write the legislation that would privatize the internet. But it is the way we communicate with each other, and it's the way we learn about the world and the way the rest of the world learns about us. So we have to keep these channels of communication open. And we also have to support independent media, media that's run by people who are deeply concerned about the state of the planet, not by corporations that profit from climate change, you know, not run by the oil, the gas, the coal companies, that are not the corporations that we're trying to investigate. That's why independent media, I think, is an integral part of the whole fight for democracy in this country.
I could not agree more, and it's one of the reasons I love your work. I want to shift gears just a little bit and ask you a mega question. When people in a relatively developed country sit down to eat, we're participating, whether we know it or not, in a web of relationships that spans the globe. Supermarkets make it easy to see just the food item and the purchase price, while the stories and struggles of all the hands that help to grow and process and transport the food to us often remain invisible. If you could bring one thing into consciousness for more of us about the greater reality of our food choices, what would it be?
Well, I don't know about one thing, but I do know that these grassroots efforts to link the consumers of food with the workers who grow the food is a very important movement that has been growing around the country, like the Coalition of Immokalee Workers in Florida, pushing large corporations to pay more to the workers who pick the tomatoes. It has, I think, let people know all over the country, it has increased awareness of what this food chain is all about. You know, health care for these workers will mean that the food that is picked is done in a sustainable way. That ignited the whole minimum wage movement around the country, I think, a success Coalition of Immokalee Workers were having with everyone from Walmart to Chipotle to the various...
McDonald's and Burger King have all signed on. Do you know the only major fast food company or chain that hasn't is Wendy's?
That's interesting.
Yeah, they're holding out. Even Walmart has.
Right, right. But I think it's people organizing themselves that's been just so amazing, watching them as they travel across the country, and that's empowered many others. That's been extremely inspiring movement and educates us about what the whole food chain looks like. And, you know, this is the golden anniversary of the Dr. King March on Washington and Cesar Chavez, so important in letting us know about the chemicals that are sprayed on food, the whole migrant workers movement and fighting the pesticides that are sprayed, for example, on grapes. That continues today. These kind of chemicals that hurt the workers that pick them also hurt the people that consume them. So we're all connected. It's not about one individual group's self-interest. I think that's the most important thing for us to understand, that the ecosystem teaches us, is how interconnected we are, and that the health of one group means the health of everyone, and that's why we have to care at every level.
I'm thinking of a couple of examples of what you're talking about. One is that when we buy organically grown food, we spare our bodies the exposure to residues of pesticides that would otherwise have been sprayed on those plants. But we also, at the same time, spare the farm workers massive exposure to those chemicals. And we do a service to the soil and the quality of our air and water, which otherwise would become polluted by those chemicals. And another example I'm thinking of is that when we eat lower on the food chain, when we eat less factory farm meat, feedlot meat, we have less risk of heart disease, we're healthier people, and we're creating a kinder situation for animals because the treatment of them in factory farms is abysmal, and we're sparing the environment pollution. The greenhouse gas emissions from meat production are egregious. There are so many ways that, truthfully, what is best for us is also best for others, best for the world.
That's right. You know, each year, Democracy Now!, we go to the UN Climate Change Summit. We were just in Warsaw, Poland, and before that in Doha, Qatar, and Durban, South Africa, Cancun, Mexico, Copenhagen. And next year it'll be in Peru, and then it'll be in Paris, France. But not that much gets accomplished. The world powers try to vent any action on reducing greenhouse gas emissions, but the thousands, especially of young people and people from the most vulnerable areas in Africa where the desertification is taking place and the South Pacific islands that will be submerged underwater like the Maldives. But the awareness that people have of how the climate affects all of us is so much more sophisticated outside of the United States than it is inside the United States. We have the sense in the most powerful industrialized country in the world of being invulnerable, and it isn't true. I think that's being pierced a bit by the extreme weather that has rocked our nation from cold to drought to floods. And that also has an effect on, of course, the food we eat. It's very important that we're getting the sense of how interconnected we are. And that's a very important lesson for politics in general, that we all depend on each other.
We do. And we also live in a world with vast inequities. Many people in this world feel as if they have very little choice about what they'll eat, and some feel lucky if they're able to eat at all. For those of us who have the privilege of choice about the foods we eat, what's important to you, and how would you suggest we might use that choice to help build a better world for all?
Well, I think we do have to be very careful about our food choices. And yes, we have to be very concerned about the growing disparity between rich and poor, those who have access to food and those that don't. But the decisions we make will determine how much there is out there. The more dependent we are on cows that are devouring the Amazon, that destroys the planet for everyone. I think it's very important that we take seriously each of our individual food choices and try our best to live in a more sustainable way. There is nothing more powerful than being a role model for someone else. None of us is perfect, but trying our best to live lower down on the food chain, complementing our proteins and trying to get away from the very foods that aren't good for us anyway, like red meat. But those also consume so much more energy. So all around, these choices we make both affect what we consume, but also are very political choices that will determine the fate of the planet.
One of the most fundamental imperatives of journalism is to hold those in power accountable. And yet, one of the reasons that the mainstream press has done such a poor job at holding those in power in the food world accountable to the public good is that most forms of mainstream media, including TV and radio and newspapers and magazines, depend on advertising revenue from junk food companies, from companies like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Kraft, Nestle, McDonald's. Those are the very companies that, as you mentioned earlier, joined with Monsanto to pay for efforts to succeed in blocking bills that would have mandated labeling of GMOs in California and Washington and other states. Because of their influence in the media, almost all the newspapers in California and Washington came out opposed to the labeling bills, even though the vast majority of people in the state were in favor of them, at least at the beginning of the campaigns. What can be done to break the stranglehold here over what people eat, over what people think, about what they're allowed to know that corporations are increasingly exerting?
Well, I really do think there's visceral feeling across the political spectrum against corporate control of our lives. We never can predict when the magic moment will come, but if we're involved in social change, when it does, we help make history. Look at the Occupy movement, which I still think has far-reaching effects. Ask anyone what the 99% is or the 1% is. Everyone knows. They changed the conversation. And that happened in one fell swoop. September 17, 2011, people marched on Zuccotti Park in New York. Cesar Chavez with the Great Boycott, how it changed everyone in this country, whether or not people participated in the boycott. Grapes look different, I think, to everyone, and we came to understand not only how they were poisoning migrant workers, but also ourselves and eating them. So you never know when the moment will come. And yes, corporations exert enormous power, but there is a force more powerful, and it is the vast majority of people. People care about the health of their families. We want to know what it is that we are consuming, and I think that we just have to continue to fight for more information and more control over our food supply.
When you, Amy, yourself, when you're buying something like coffee or chocolate or bananas, and there's the opportunity to get fair trade certified versions of those foods, do you go out of your way to get those?
Yes, I try my hardest. By no means am I perfect in this, but even to stand at a coffee shop and say, do you have fair trade? It's very important just for the people around you hearing that, for the person who's behind the counter having to register that question, even if you know they don't have it, but to say, why not, or do you brew fair trade? chocolate's a very important question because so much of it's slave grown, and yet it is so addictive and so delicious. There is a growing movement for fair trade chocolate. What is so important, I think, about the food movement is that we need food every single day. So these are the little personal acts we engage in every day that can change the world.
I also buy fair trade whenever I can. And when I do, I always announce it. I say, I want those coffee beans because they're fair trade. And usually people nod. There's a growing sense that this means something. And what it means is important. It's in seed form at the moment when you look at the entire global supply chains. But more and more, fair trade is being seen as important as it really is.
Yes.
Amy, for decades now, you've been bringing desperately needed attention to human rights violations and to struggles for democracy all over the world. Your voice and your work stand in our culture singularly in their power and in their influence and in their counterbalance to forces that corporations would use to control everything that we think and eat and do and what we're allowed to know. I am tremendously honored that you have spoken with us, to have brought your voice to our audience and to the Food Summit. You really are one of my heroes.
Well, I'm so honored to be with you, and it's wonderful you're having this Food Summit. And I work with a remarkable group of people, and it's broader than the actual people that I work together with in New York, because Democracy Now! Is more than a program. It's more than a show. It's a movement. And it is a movement to increasingly get access to information. And I think the power of Democracy Now! Is the authenticity of the voices of people speaking for themselves. When you hear someone speaking for their own experience, there's nothing more powerful. So thanks so much for inviting me on. The Food Summit is a key part of this growing awareness of our planet that starts in a very personal way with the food we choose to eat. And thanks so much for doing this, John and Ocean.
We've been talking with Amy Goodman, the executive producer and host of Democracy Now! Amy, your work sheds a penetrating light on some of the most vital issues of our times. On behalf of everyone who wants democracy, freedom, and a healthy world for us and for future generations, we want to thank you for your courage, for your honesty, and for the love and truth that you bring to the world. We want to thank you for joining us today, and we want to thank you for your huge contribution to the food revolution.
Thank you so much.
This concludes our interview, but our work is just getting started. If you feel excited by what you just heard and want to share it with other people in your life, if you want permanent access to 23 more amazing presentations and transcripts, then we have an offer to share. You can get a download and a transcript of the entire Food Revolution Summit, plus a huge collection of bonus resources. If you like, you can also get CDs, members-only courses, and a lot more. This empowerment package is available for a major discount between now and the end of the summit. For more information, please visit foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Again, that's foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Thanks so much for joining us in the Food Revolution. And now we have some pre-recorded bonus messages from some of the people whose lives have been touched by the food revolution. This is a businessman turned food activist, Iran Zahavi of Los Angeles, California.
My name is Iran Zahavi. I'm 34 years old and I'm an early partner in a startup technology company. I am very healthy and energetic. I love eating healthy food. My wife loves that about me and my diet and my choices. Although that wasn't always the case. Up until a couple of years ago, I was pretty uninformed about the impact of my food choices and was eating a standard American diet. My wife was putting up with it, but it was a bit of a strain for us because I ate a lot worse than she did, and although I didn't know it at the time, it was actually a big strain for my body. So I discovered the Food Revolution Summit, and it couldn't have come at a more perfect time. I was about to become a dad, my company was growing pretty fast, and I would need more energy than I ever did. And lo and behold, I was able to find that through the change in my food choices. So with the Food Revolution Summit, I got a lot of the insights that I needed, and they came from trusted experts, which was great because I was able to get onto a healthier path. You know, now my wife and I are aligned with our food choices, and we're excited that we can raise our child in a healthy home, and we know what best to feed him as well as ourselves. And with my own personal choices, I found that my energy levels increased, my mental clarity increased, and that's been good for every aspect of my life, whether it's my business or my family or just my personal life. And the great benefit of the summit was that I could share what I learned with my friends and coworkers. And it wasn't just by me telling them what I learned, but with the empowerment package, I could lend them CDs, I could email them transcripts, or whatever they were looking for, I had a resource to point them in the right direction. Amazingly, really, the Food Revolution has not only been good for me, but it's been great for my family, it's been great for my professional life, it's great for my health, and it's been really amazing for the people around me, my friends and my colleagues. And I'm just really grateful to have this information at hand. Not only did I learn it, but I can continue to go back to it, and I can continue to share it. And most importantly, beyond changing my own habits, I have the opportunity to share it with the people that I love.
Next, we have a message from Carrie Zimmerman, who lives in Madison, Wisconsin.
Hello, my name is Carrie Zimmerman. I am 32 years old and live in Madison, Wisconsin. Currently, I'm feeling so much better than I have in years, and much of that is thanks to the Food Revolution Summit. My parents both died with cancer, mom at 52 years old, dad at 63. As if that wasn't devastating enough, I felt that I was on the same path, leading to disease and premature death. I had my own health concerns since I was a child. I was overweight and then obese by early high school and had significant digestive problems and was diagnosed with IBS. By this time last year, I had been dealing with constant abdominal pain for over a year and a half. It negatively impacted every aspect of my life, and it didn't go away for even a moment. There were many doctors and many tests, but no real answers. The Food Revolution Summit gave me the information, inspiration, and motivation that I needed to improve my diet and lifestyle. The constant pain that I had endured for over 22 months disappeared, and so did the IBS. John, Ocean, and every single one of the speakers, you helped me realize that I could heal myself with food and inspired me to share that information with others. And I will be doing that. I'm currently working on becoming certified as a health coach. You have changed my life, and I am just getting started. Thank you so very much.
To share your insights and reflections on what you've been hearing and to find out what other people are saying, you can post and engage in the comments section at the bottom of our broadcast page. Make sure to refresh the page so you can see the latest comments. Our next presentation will be a teleconference interview with best-selling author and food justice leader, Dr. Raj Patel, that will start at the top of the hour. Until then, this is some music from our friend, Bruce Bekvar.